Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Up here with my friends. Hey, I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to educate, teach you, context. Call me, 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. All right, we got some terrific news from CNBC's Delivering Alpha Stock Survey today. A majority of respondents believe the market's gotten overheated and we're headed for a pullback. With the averages once again up, Dow gaining 478 points, S&P snapping out of a three-day decline, rallying 0.86%, NASDAQ climbing 0.51%. You know what I have to say? Hallelujah about that survey. So far, the S&P is up 10% for the first quarter, best start of the year since 2019, which is why I accept the fact that we could be due for a pullback. And you know what? We should welcome it, not fear
bye,
it.
Bye.
How can I cheer for something that will cost shareholders money, including my own charitable trust? Because, you see, sell-offs are inevitable. They are to be expected, even as we never know exactly when they'll hit. So what? We have to welcome them. I learned this from the legendary Peter Lynch, who ran the Fidelity Magello Fund for 13 years, where he trounced the market's performance. A little more on that later. I bring him up because Peter Lynch famously welcomed sell-offs. He told you to expect a 10% pullback every 2 years on average and a 25% beatdown every 6 years. He made these comments about 30 years ago. At the time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average stood at 3,797. He predicted that despite these pullbacks, the stock market would do well over the long haul as long as corporate profits held up. And historically, he noted that corporate profits tend to grow by 8% per year. Given that the stock market broadly follows earnings, that 8% rule of thumb would put the Dow at 38,238 in 30 years, meaning now. Well, sure enough, Dow hit 39,760 today. I call that pretty much on schedule, maybe a little ahead of time.
All aboard!
Peter Lynch is the man who told me not to fear corrections. As he put it, and I quote, far more money has been lost by investors in preparing for corrections or anticipating corrections than has been lost in the corrections themselves. In other words, people sell, like the people in this survey, and then they don't get back in and they end up missing a huge amount of performance. When most people see a survey that says investors are bracing for a pullback, they shudder with fear. Look, I have no problem with raising a little cash up here. That's just being responsible. But otherwise, I think you got to ride them out. Because if you're always trying to avoid the next pullback, very often you'll end up missing out on the next rally. Let me put it this way. As a gardener, and believe me, I am salivating for my 36th garden in a row with planting season right around the corner, I know I won't be able to raise my precious tomatoes unless there's rain. Without showers, ain't got nothing for you. You need to view these pullbacks as rainstorms. They're inevitable. They're necessary. And they can help your portfolio grow if you approach them correctly. Now, what if the 8% annual growth in corporate profits doesn't hold up this time? Going back to that Delivering Alpha survey, there was an increase in the amount of people saying that they think we're headed for a recession in 2025. Right now, 52% said it. That's up 23% in the previous quarterly survey. Holy cow. Lynch's long-term forecast encompasses those recessions. And we've had some real doozies since he made those comments 30-odd years ago. But, man, I mean, think about it. We got a fair share of bear markets in recent years. S&P plunged 35% in February and March of 2020, thanks to COVID. Then it plunged 27.5% from relative highs set in the first days of 2022 through the lows of October 22. And that was
the House of Pain.
Maybe we aren't in due for a bone crusher because we just had two of them. Let's get granular. 39% of the CNBC delivering alpha respondents say it's time to sell out of AI related stocks because they've run too far. Terrific. Let me tell you something. On September 30th, 2009, I stumbled upon this company that made the fastest chips in the world. His name was NVIDIA. It was run by this young guy named Jensen Huang. I don't know. He wore a motorcycle jacket. What's that about? But I was totally smitten. Stock price was just $3.75 per share. By June of 2010, NVIDIA traded down to below $3. Of course, using the pre-split numbers, that meant that the stock was at $15 when I recommended it, and it had dropped to $11 and change, where I just continued to recommend it, continued and continued. I was pilloried, even websites that I was affiliated with at the time. I defended NVIDIA constantly. At one point, with the stock at $10 pre-split in November 2010, I dared people to short it. Go ahead, make my day. Short NVIDIA. I kept pounding the table on this one because of those lightning-fast chips and what could happen with them. Eventually, the stock caught fire as NVIDIA's high-end graphics cards started selling like hotcakes. Back then, it was all about video games. Then I began to hear about how these chips could cause a revolution in the data center, one that could lead to what we're now hearing is called artificial intelligence. I was skeptical. AI had been a bust for so long. On May 16th of 2019, I went to see Jensen at his headquarters, and he showed me things AI that I couldn't believe. So I went nuts on NVIDIA, both on the set and particularly on Squawk on the Street. Faber told me he got sick of it after a while, but I didn't care. I just kept going. The stock was at $40. I went back to NVIDIA headquarters in 2021 with the stock at $330, up 300 points in 2 years. And prompted by Jensen, I asked the machine to paint a Cezanne seascape, knowing from my spots and dots course at Harvard, also known as art appreciation, that the fellow was a real still life guy. I watched robot dogs try to pick up Jell-O cubes, Jensen rewarding the ones that could do that. Jell-O cubes are not notoriously difficult to pick up. I came back and couldn't stop talking about it. Next thing you know, less than a year later, the stock had plummeted to $108 thanks to the hideous bear market in tech, and I was the goat of the game. But you know what? NVIDIA then went to $974. And suddenly, the only goat people can talk about is the greatest of all time. Obviously, that's Jensen, not me. I was just along for the ride. If you took your cue from me, though, you would have stuck with NVIDIA and racked up a huge gain. That's the Peter Lynch method. Now, here we are again. Oh, boy, the stock, it is just getting hammered. Oh, it's ugly, isn't it? People, again, they are sick. They're nauseous of NVIDIA. I drank half a bottle of Pepto-Bismol today. Just to have a guy at the chicken out pastores a little too hot for me. But just to be sympathetic with the people who own NVIDIA, right? They're all tired of me talking about it. I told people, especially investing club members, not to buy the stock around the time of last week's GTC conference. I said, don't buy it. It's now getting clobbered. But you know what? I still say you got to own it. Don't trade it. I bet NVIDIA sells off more thanks to this newfound revulsion toward AI, and then it bottoms. And you got to be there. Just remember that we've seen this movie before. Do you know how stupid I looked when I kept recommending NVIDIA from $330 to $115? That's fine with me, though. The business isn't about looking smart. That's what we did when the stock got crushed in 2022. It's what we're going to do again. Maybe we even buy some more for the trust. My advice to those who are tired of AI, I've heard it all. Be tired. Be fatigued. Be sellers. I don't care. I've taken my hits with NVIDIA, and I keep ticking. You know why? Because I have seen the future. And the future, well, it runs on NVIDIA. Here's the bottom line. I think people are right to expect to pull back here eventually for some tech, right? But that's not a reason to head for the hills. Instead, you want to raise a little cash, watch the market broaden as it is doing, and then buy your favorite tech stocks when they come down. If you don't own NVIDIA already, you know what? You're getting a sale. And if you do own it already, just stick with it. Because it's way too hard to swap out and swap back in the right level. You see, you know why? Because nobody's that good. How about we go to Sam in my home state of New Jersey? Sam!
Hello, Jim, and the good old-fashioned booyah from Edison, New Jersey.
Best kind of booyah. Best kind of booyah. Local booyah. What's up?
I had a question about the stock iPath. What I like about the stock, Jim, is that it's based in the good old USA, but it has a global imprint with AI opportunities such as automation programs, logging into applications, and cloud of automation. It's currently trading about $4 off its high. Your thoughts, sir?
I like Dines. I like Dines a lot. He's a smart fella. I think you're right. I think at $22, you want to own it. There were some people who owned it much, much higher, and they didn't do that well. But at this level, I think you're fine. I think you got horse sense. Can we go to John in Florida, please, John?
Hey, Mr. Krim, how are you doing today, sir?
Doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. I got a quick question for you. I got into Starbucks back during the COVID pandemic, got in for about $72, been hovering around 91 for the last few weeks. I'm wondering if now is a good time to cash out.
Okay, no. I had a very long talk about Starbucks today with Jeff Marks. You got to join this investing club, for heaven's sake. The discussion on Starbucks was so good. It's on a replay. I had Dylan Reback posted on the Twitter thing. So you can go to Twitter, X. You know, it's right there. And the Starbucks is, it's probably like 5 points off its where it can go when they report a disappointing quarter. Then it could be a rocket ship when they explain, not unlike RH tonight, that this is the last bad quarter. But it's not a good quarter. It's not. And that's why the stock's not at 120. It's at 90. So let's deal with that. It's called
House of Pleasure.
But you know what the next address over is?
The House of Pain.
Yeah, just kidding. I think that here's the deal with this stock. I do want to make this point. I'm sorry. I got to go to college. I had a Starbucks today. Triple venti cappuccino with skin wet. And then I had an ice cold Starbucks. Can I just tell you, it was good. It was real good. And that's not the reason why I'm sticking by it. I'm sticking by it because they happen to have this locksman. You got to give this locksman Narasim a chance. Everybody wants to dump it. Everybody. And I say, buy, don't dump. I think it makes sense that people are expecting a pullback here. Makes sense. But it isn't a reason to head for the hills. Instead, I think you got to ride it out and buy your favorite tech stocks after they come down and enjoy the broadening out of this fantastic rally. Industrials, banks, wow! Healthcare. Remember tonight, Merck received FDA approval for its pulmonary arterial hypertension drug, which just shot the stock higher, but it ain't done. Let me tell you, there's so much more left in this pipeline with the CEO. Then Kimberly Clark hosts Investor Day highlighting the next chapter of the iconic household goods company. And I'm hearing all about the plans for the future with the CEO. And from an activist investor to the fallout East Palestine train derailment, there's a lot to discuss with Norfolk Southern. I'm getting an update with the company's top brass. They don't duck anything. Stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you look at this majestic rally in Merck, where the big pharma stock soaring almost 5% today after last night's announcement that they got an FDA approval for their new pulmonary arterial hypertension drug. That is huge. And not just because this is the first decent treatment option for a potentially life-threatening disease. It's also good news for Merck because, like most of big pharma, it always needs new products, as some of their blockbuster drugs are always going to lose patent protection in the not-too-distant future. That's the game. Last year, Merck got over 40% of its sales from Keytruda. It's fabulous, the best anti-cancer drug. But Keytruda will begin to go off patent 2028. While it's a great business now, they always have limited shelf life. That's how it works. And that's why these guys have been making a bunch of small, medium-sized acquisitions, and they're crushing it. $10 billion purchase of Prometheus Biosciences. Remember that? We had about that, the immunological pipeline. As for the pulmonary arterial hypertension drug that just got approved, it's the payoff from Merck's $11.5 billion acquisition of Acceleron Pharma back in 2021. So it's not just good news, it's great news. The proposed management strategy is working. But do not take it from me. Let's check in with Rob Davis, the chairman and CEO of Merck, to get a better real estate situation. Mr. Davis, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here. It's a great day for Merck, and it's frankly a great day for patients.
And let's talk about the patients. There are, it's a pretty bleak future until today, isn't it?
Well, you know, it is. This disease, and this is a rare disease, so it doesn't really get a lot of attention, but pulmonary arterial hypertension is really devastating. This is a disease primarily affects women in the prime of life, age 30 to 60. And unfortunately, and the bad news is the mortality rate for this disease is about 43% in 5 years. So it's a devastating disease, not only for the patient, but you can imagine for the families, and for everyone. And so the fact that potentially we now have a disease modifying agent that can really make a difference for these patients is something we're very excited about. This is a novel mechanism of action. It's not existed before. It's an activin signaling inhibitor, and really we believe has the potential to remodel the vasculature that allows you to avoid what happens today with PAH, which is you get a narrowing and a thickening of the arterial walls. This actually works to stop that and potentially reverse it. We'll have to see further studies, but this is exciting.
But no matter what I do, I come back that it could be a $7 billion drug, $10 billion on the surface, but could this be an extension to other things that you might try it for, or is that, because that's pretty bold what's happening?
Well, it is. So the initial indication is now as add-on therapy for people who are on either dual or triple therapy.
Okay.
So there's both opportunity to move into earlier lines, which we think is something we're going to study. We have studies underway to potentially prove that. But actually more exciting is the potential to move more broadly than PAH, which is right, the specific thing we have here, into pulmonary hypertension and into heart failure. And so that obviously is a bigger opportunity. We have a pretty large phase 2 study called the Cadence study looking at that.
Wow. Now, did you know about this when you guys bought Acceleron?
We did. But, you know, the thing that was really exciting about this, and it's a testament to the Merck scientists,
right,
frankly. My team at Merck and our cardiovascular group, we were looking at other agents. We were doing our own internal work in PAH. They came forward when they saw some of the phase 1, phase 2 data and said this could be something special. And that's what caused us to move and do the acquisition. Initially, the first study, which is the basis of this approval, called the STELLAR study, was only supposed to show improvement in symptom through a walk distance. We actually showed reduction in risk of clinical worsening, which we didn't expect to get to a later study.
Right.
That has now opened up the opportunity to go more broadly. So we knew it was there.
Right.
We focused on it for this initial indication, but the promise of what this can be based on the strength of the data is something we're very excited about.
Now that I've heard you say that, I don't think the stock is up nearly as much. Now, that's my job. I'm a stock guy. You run the great company that is Merck. Now, last time you were on Prometheus.
Yes.
I think there's some real promise there, and I don't expect anything yet because you told me not to expect. But how's it going?
It's going well. You know, so we are currently enrolling our phase 3 study for ulcerative colitis. We're going to start our phase 3 study in Crohn's disease later this year, and we continue to see great promise with that acquisition, and frankly see that as continuing to be a foundation for our broader portfolio of immunology assets, very similar to how in Acceleron with now what we called Sotatercept, now the brand name is Winrevair. Is really the foundation for our broader cardiometabolic platform as well.
And people need to know, you're going after big ones and tough ones. You're not going after the ones that people have solved coming up with a Me Too. You know, congestive heart failure, anything heart, novel. And if you can break into the, you know, to this colitis, I mean, this is a giant, I don't know if people know how big.
It is. And, you know, well, and the thing that always we focus on at Merck is, and what I say to my team, focus on what matters, which is the patient.
Right.
Put the patient at the center and understand that they're waiting, and that should drive urgency, that should drive power, that should drive purpose, passion. And you know, you talk about ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, which is from the Prometheus deal. These are terrible diseases. I have family members who struggle with this. These are terrible diseases. If you think about what we did with Acceleron, we've talked about pulmonary arterial hypertension, devastating. So we're very focused, but it always starts with great science aimed at the patient.
And I don't want to lose sight. I did want to talk about animal health. We've made a good acquisition from Elanco, but Keytruda could be the greatest drug of all time. And I feel like I've given it short shrift. Things are still amazing with that franchise.
Well, you know, Keytruda is one of those things that we have so many positive data readouts that it almost makes you numb. I try to remind myself, every positive data readout is a patient population who now has a promise they didn't have before. And this is a phenomenal drug. Its ability to really be foundational therapy in cancer. You know, we now have, I think we're up to 39 indications in the United States across, I believe it's 16 different tumor types. And now what we're starting to do is move into earlier lines of therapy, because the reality of it is, if you want to cure cancer, you have to catch it early. And if we can show that Keytruda, which we are starting to do, we have multiple now approvals in earlier lines of therapy. Most notably, we recently got approval in non-small cell lung cancer. If you can do that, we can start to potentially talk cure, and that's our focus. So it's really, Keytruda still has meaningful contributions, meaningful studies underway, and we're going to see this drug make a difference for years to come.
If we can make it a manageable disease, I'll take that. But you're doing so many amazing things at Merck.
Well, thank you.
Fantastic job. That's Rob Davis, the CEO of Merck. Guys, this stock in this company is just a fantastic, breathtaking thing. That money's back there for the break.
Coming up, a walk on the softer side of Wall Street. Follow the paper trail to Kimberly Clark. Next.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Look, if you're worried about some of these signs of frothiness in the markets, big runs in recent IPOs, latest cryptocurrency craze, explosive momentum of so-called AI, then maybe you do want to own something slower and steadier, like the consumer packaged good companies. There's always a place for one of those in your portfolio, even if it's been out of style on the Wall Street fashion show of late. Take Kimberly Clark, which makes paper towels, toilet paper, diapers, feminine care products, of course, Kleenex. For several years, these guys struggled with supply chain woes and rampant cost inflation, but now they've got it under control. They're ready to go on offense again. Today, Kimberly Clark held an Investor Day event in New York, where management rolled out a new strategic plan for the next few years, including a big reorganization and, yes, indeed, some large cost cuts. Before that, though, we got a chance to sit down with Mike Hsu. And Mike is the chairman and CEO of Kimberly Clark. Take a look. Mike, welcome to Mad Money.
Jim, great to be with you.
Well, I've got to tell you, I got to ask you first, what's it like to be the steward of perhaps the most iconic story brand in our country?
Yeah, well, I know it was an early pick of yours earlier in your career.
Oh, because Goldman Sachs, absolutely right.
Yes, and well, here's the thing. It's the story of a great American company, and so I take that responsibility very seriously. You know, since our founding, the founding values were about taking care of our consumers and our people and our investors. And the company's really done that through innovation. You know, we invented most of the categories that we operate in today, starting with Kotex and Kleenex in the Great Depression, all the way to adult care for people that are incontinent. And so it's, you know, we take our responsibility very seriously. We've always brought innovation to the core of what we do. And so we're really excited to move on to our next chapter of growth.
Well, okay, the next chapter of growth is going to be helped, I think, by this transformation that you've announced, which I think is very important because you're going to kind of localize things. All these brands need to be sold on a local level.
Yep.
And I think you could take share if you do that.
Yeah. Yeah, the big thing for us is we saw the need to continue our transformation because I see an opportunity to really turn it up a notch, right? And to step on the gas a bit. We've kind of navigated some big challenges in the market the last few years with the pandemic. We had disruption of the global supply chain. Right. So we navigated, as you're well aware, an inflation super cycle. And I think the team has done a phenomenal job kind of getting the company through that healthier. At the same time, what we were focused on is proving out our thesis that we could elevate these categories. As I came in to KC, I felt like the amount of differentiation in the categories was not as high as what the consumers were looking for. And so that we had an opportunity to make the products better and set our brands apart a bit.
And when you do that, tell about the China story. It's rather amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing was that we think there's a lot of growth left in our categories because we can make the products better, worth paying more for, and having consumers trade into a better performing product. And so the example in China is amazing. I think back in 2020, about 9% of our business was premium, super premium mix. You know, 3 years later, we're at 42%. And so we have made a big shift in terms of the value and what the consumers are looking for, and they're demanding better products.
At the same time, we don't have any words that are successful companies that are still the verbs or the nouns. I never call tissue tissue. I always call it Kleenex.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you able to preserve that?
Well, you know, it starts with the brand, and it also starts with the fundamental differentiation in the product. We believe we make the best tissue products. We have unique proprietary processes. We invest a lot in materials development, product engineering, and process development. And because of that, we still, in a lot of cases, manufacture our own manufacturing assets.
Right.
And so our products are very differentiated. And of course, marketing plays a big role. And we're trying to serve consumers' need, the biggest unmet needs that they have.
Right. Now, at the same time, the productivity savings you're looking for at the meeting they're very big. Can it happen?
Yeah, we have some big goals. So to really turbocharge, I mean, there's really three parts of our plan, which is one, we want to accelerate pioneering innovation, which I'm happy to tell you more about. The second part is, you know, we got to find another gear on cost, and we want to be superior quality, lowest possible cost. And I think we can do more of that. And then the third part is we have to rewire our organization to get faster and better. And
now,
so those are really the
three. Well, why don't you give me some sense of innovation? I think some people may just say, what's new under the sun here?
Yeah. So the thing is, and it's interesting because, you know, I've worked in a lot of categories and people always ask, well, isn't that a commodity? And we view it differently inside the walls of Kimberly-Clark because we feel like, hey, there's nothing more important than mom and dad taking care of their infant. And we think we can continue to do a better job of that. Question, why should there ever be diaper rash, right? And so for us, right, how we think about it is there's a hierarchy of needs, good, better, best. Leak-free confidence, platform one. Garment-like comfort and fit. We're inspired by all the innovations that has happened in the apparel industry. And then the third plank for us is skin health and wellness, which goes back to diaper rash. And we think we can do a lot better job in each of those different areas.
Now, you are in a sensitive space in the sense that we want the best, but a new generation, two new generations are coming up, and they want to know the best, and they want to know how it's sourced. You spend a tremendous amount of time about sourcing. Some people's eyes glaze over on this. You are making substantive changes in the way the earth is going to be because of what you harvest.
Yeah, well, this dates back to my predecessor, Tom Falk, and my old boss, and who you know well.
Yes, indeed.
You know, we're a company that is proud of our track record on sustainability. And we view ourselves as, you know, 50, 100 years ago, we owned hundreds of thousands of acres of forest, right? And so we're now not in that part of the business, but we view ourselves as being one step removed from a natural resources company. So we take that responsibility seriously. We're one of the largest producers of tissue products. And you know, we've set a new ambition. You know, we believe we can produce our product line with being 100% free from natural forest fiber. Now, today, we still use a lot of natural forest fiber, but we're working on product development and engineering, and we think that someday we'll get to an exceptional product experience at a price that consumers can afford that is much more sustainable for them.
Okay, and I got to tell you, yes, you absolutely know my background. It was the first stock I recommended. It was at Goldman Sachs and continue to recommend it and then owned it for my hedge fund because Kleenex will never be replaced. We're not going to have an Asian version of Kleenex on our table. At the same time, you've got a great dividend, yields 3.8%. But are you not surprised that somehow the price-to-earnings multiple is lower, I think, than it should be? Do you think these changes can make people realize that the stock is just too cheap versus its peers?
That's what we're betting on. I think it's I think we deserve more and we can do more for our shareholders. And that's also why we're holding our investor day. And, you know, because we believe there's a higher degree of growth. There's a higher margin of higher degree of margin productivity that we can drive, and we can do that through a faster organization.
And just one last thing. When I look at the people may not realize you have $6 billion brands. Can there be seven, eight, or are you just trying to make those $1 billion brands bigger?
Well, we're focusing on 12 core brands. And so, yeah, we have six today. We'd love a few more. And you know, of course, if everything goes as we plan, we'll see that.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't know. I like it as much as when I first recommended it because it is an unassailable company and you are a good steward of it. Thank you so much. That's Mike Hughes, the CEO of Kimberly-Clark. Look, not bad to get a good yield and some growth. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, important updates from Norfolk Southern. The railway CEO joins Cramer next.
You know, I love the railroad stocks. I have since I started this job. We've got to ask, what do we do with this proxy fight at Norfolk Southern? The big East Coast railroads had an eventful past year or so, February of 2023. There was that horrifying derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Last month, activist investors at Ancora Holdings, $1 billion worth of shares, launched a proxy contest. They're highly critical of management's ability to get their operating ratio down. It's a key metric. And they're after seven seats on the board of directors, shake things up. But on some level, the actors have a point. Norfolk Southern stock has lagged the other railroads in the past year, but you know, I gotta hear management's side of the story. So let's take a close look with Alan Shaw, the president and CEO of Norfolk Southern, get a better sense of what's really going on here. Mr. Shaw, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, great to see you again.
All right, so Norfolk Southern has a difference of philosophy with these, with the activists. Can you give out your philosophy and how you think you can do over time, particularly with some of these metrics like that operating ratio?
Yeah, Jim, you know, I became CEO less than 2 years ago, and I laid out a transformational strategy for NS that safely and responsibly balances service, productivity, and growth with safety as a core. And I came on your show like the next day.
I know.
Right? And we talked about like the outsized impacts this has for our shareholders and our customers. And yeah, we had a challenge last year, as you noted, right? But we met that challenge head on and never lost sight of where we're taking this powerful franchise. And we improved safety last year. We improved service last year. We started to grow with our most service-sensitive customers, like J.B. Hunt and UPS.
That's intermodal, which is the thing that's really a big swing factor. You're winning over from trucks. You're winning over that cargo.
Yeah, that's highway conversions to rail are a part of our strategy, right? And now we have responsibly and safely created the platform for significant margin improvement in 2024 and laid the foundation for that long-term growth that you just talked about and long-term shareholder value creation.
And now we had this, again, a terrible tragedy in Baltimore. Does that impact your business? And can you become someone who can help get cargo get it to places that right now are blocked?
Yeah, Baltimore's an important port for us, and it handles a lot of export coal for us, as you know. But you know what? Our job is to provide logistics solutions to our customers, and we've got deep relationships with our customers. We're working with them on those logistics solutions. We serve every major port up and down the East Coast, and Norfolk Southern has the largest coal export terminal in the Northern Hemisphere down in Norfolk. And so we're working with our customers right now to provide logistics solutions to help them get around this disruption.
In general, commerce right now in the country, as you see it, because I think the rails move so much commerce, you're really a bellwether.
Yeah, you know, from our seat, we have a unique view of the U.S. economy. Basically, we handle every market that's out there. The automotive franchise is still doing really well. Construction market seems like it's heating up a little bit. Truck market is still really loose, and that drives some weakness in our intermodal franchise. But look, we're investing in the long term. We're improving our service product. We're improving productivity. That's starting to drive growth for us. So I got a lot of confidence on where we're going in the back half of this year and beyond.
Okay, so the challengers, they want more of what's called precision rail. They have a fellow, Jamie Boychuk, who was from CSX. They want him to be the COO, not a nominee, but they felt Jim Barber was UPS for a long time, mentioned UPS. William Clyburn was a former commissioner, vice chair of U.S. Surface Transportation. Governor Kasich, Ohio, I mean, if you got the problem in East Palestine, he could be of assistance. These people seem like got to be somebody that might want, no?
Well, look, Jim, we got a really strong board. You know, we've got 13 nominees, which include former CEOs who've got direct rail and transportation experience. We've got a former admiral, and we've got rail safety advocates. So we have a really strong board. We've gone to the activists, and we've offered a settlement. Their responses have been unreasonable.
I mean, you interviewed the people and you said, listen, maybe we could have someone if you want. And they said no.
Yeah, we've offered a settlement. Their response has
Can
been.
Can you give some inkling, or is that private about what the settlement is?
We've offered a couple board seats.
You have?
Yes.
To people you interviewed, you went through the process, did you?
We went through the process. We offered seats. ANCOR is looking for wholesale change. And our board firmly believes that is drives long-term shareholder destruction.
If you take out the East Palestine incident, which I know is very hard because it's a terrible thing, your numbers were getting better.
Jim, since I became CEO, our velocity has improved 27%. Right, okay. Right? We delivered record revenue in 2022. We were making a lot of improvements. Our safety improved last year. Mainline accident rate declined by 38%. So we're improving service. We're improving growth. We got to improve productivity.
Right.
That's what we're doing right now.
Well, let's talk about the operating ratio is higher than CSX. It is higher than Union Pacific. It was coming down until, I don't know. I mean, how do we get that one down to say, can you ever get it to 62 like CSX or 62 like Union Pacific? Is that in the cards for you?
Sure it is. We announced a plan and targets for a sub-60 OR in the next 3 to 4 years, right? We've got the leadership. And we've got the plan to deliver that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I did not know, candidly, that you had actually offered the board seat. I know that there have been discussions that, you know, I'm thinking in the context of Disney, where there was no real discussion, no real help. And that's a company that has radically underperformed, and your company has not radically underperformed. Now, give me a sense of the lessons of the incident of East Palestine. And I say that because I thought that could dog you forever. But you did some things that made it so people were able to recognize how responsible you were.
Yeah, Jim, I think, you know, let's talk about how I navigated NS through a number of challenges within the past 2 years, right? When I became CEO less than 2 years ago, we were in the middle of a highly politicized, highly public labor negotiation.
Right.
Then we had East Palestine. I had to take decisive action to protect our shareholders and protect our franchise. And we made a number of promises, and Jim, I've kept every single one of our promises. We enhanced safety. We're making it right in East Palestine. We enhanced service. And now we got that platform to really drive productivity in 2024 and really drive long-term growth and shareholder value.
It's not like you've had 10 years at the helm and it's time to refresh the board. I mean, you're refreshing the board as it is, but at the same time, I mean, you kind of just got started. And I remember the terrible incident. I remember the promises you made on this show. And I have followed up, and you have delivered on all of those promises and more. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, it's about keeping our word, keeping promises, and doing exactly what we said we were going to do. And I am saying we're going to deliver on productivity this year. We got a significant opportunity for 400 to 500 basis points of margin improvement in the second half of this year and really drive industry competitive margins at Norfolk Southern. At the same time, we deliver top tier EPS and revenue growth.
Well, I held your feet to the fire in East Palestine. I don't know if I have to hold your feet to the fire again on the proxy, because you just got over East Palestine. Well, it's going to take a while to totally get over. I don't want to minimize it, but I don't know. Doing a pretty good job, if you ask me.
Well, thank you.
All right. That's Alan Shaw, President and CEO of Norfolk Southern. Look, the other guys are nominating some good people, and they've got a lot of good thoughts about Precision Railroad. And you don't know. It's a difference of philosophy. But I know this gentleman said that East Palestine was going to make, he was going to make it right, and he did. And I think in a lot of ways that matters big, too. Mad Money's back after the break.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The lightning round is up next.
It is time for some of the lightning rounds. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Dad, turn to the lightning round, because I'm going to start with Edwin in Georgia. Edwin!
Booyah, Jim. Booyah to you.
Booyah right back.
Okay, 20, 21 years of watching and listening to you.
Thank you.
I got one question. How do you feel about getting into Archer Aviation, ACHR?
Well, you know what, Edwin? I'm a kind man. I'm a good man. That's actually from Apocalypse Now. But I can't recommend that stock because it just has no earnings power, and we got to stick with it. There's so many good stocks right now. We don't need that. I would prefer NVIDIA down 27 today. Donald in New Jersey. Donald!
Booyah, Dr. Kramer. This is Donald Ryan from Jersey City, New Jersey.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Mr. Henrietta Small. Jim, I want to know, should I buy or sell Bye-Bye Robinhood?
Man, I tell you, I think that Greyhound bus has left the station. And I got to wait. I mean, the thing just doubled in no time whatsoever. Vlad doing some good things, but it's double. We're not going to buy the double. We don't buy doubles here. Let's go to Dick in Virginia. Dick.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
And great show. I have a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. I've held Cummins engine in my IRA for about 10 years, but I want to replace it with General Electric. I think it has more upside potential.
Don't you have room for both? Jen Rumsey's doing such a fabulous job. I don't want you selling the Cummins. In the meantime, I think Larry Culp's going to, that stock is so obviously headed for 220. It's crazy. I think you can't sell the Cummins. You just got to put a little extra money in and buy the GE. I will not, as a matter of fact, I forbid you from selling Cummins, but you can buy GE. There, strong statement. That one go to Nathan in Oregon, my daughter's old home state. Nathan.
Hey, Jim. Wanted to ask you about this company that is going through a fight for both seats with its former CEO. Should I hold, sell, or buy more of Crown Castle, CCI?
Actually, at this level with a 6% yield, I would actually buy some more. I think it's a good idea. And I haven't felt that way about Crown Castle in ages. Let's go to Frank in New York. Frank!
Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for everything you do for us. You had the lady that runs this company on not so long ago. And I like her story. And I'm wondering why this company can't follow in Elf's footsteps. Oddity. ODD.
Yeah, I didn't like the fact that they did a secondary after I recommended the stock. And I think the stock's okay, but I didn't like that. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the lightning round.
The lightning round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, the path to profit starts with this pivotal step. Kramer offers a suggestion fit for any portfolio. Next.
I keep thinking about that Wise letter, the one Larry Fink sent to his very pleased BlackRock shareholders, the one we heard about when he came on the show last night. See, in preparation for that interview, I spoke to as many 20-somethings as I could, take the financial temperature. And I didn't like what I heard about their savings or the lack thereof. Didn't like it one darn bit. Most of these kids have valid complaints about inflation, student loan debt too high, supermarket too expensive, dining out, and tickets to a concert. Ridiculous. They spoke gloomily about how their generation missed the bus, and it's too late to recover. They believe they're destined to do worse than their parents. On top of that, these members of Generation Z, they lack confidence. Confidence in the capital markets, confidence in the jobs, confidence in the country. Maybe confidence themselves. I get where they're coming from. But every generation goes through this. Let's hop in the Wayback Machine to 45 years ago. I was covering homicide at the now-defunct L.A. Herald Examiner. Awful paper. My apartment had been broken into twice in 1 week while I was working. Bad neighborhood. Police weren't going to help. I was too small time. So was the theft. Then on a miserable Monday, I drove down to San Diego to cover a sniper shooting. School. Horrendous. Stayed overnight in my car. Who would have thought that that would be the first of many, many months I spent living in that 1978 Fort Fairmont? When I got home, everything was gone. Boom, clean. Robert had taken my checkbook, too. I had nothing. Nothing at all. Couldn't pay the rent. Immediately evicted. I just had the clothes. Clothes I was wearing. Yeah. Everything I would own was stolen. And until it had been stolen, I'd been a pretty good little saver, you know that? Making my dad proud. I tried to put away $50 a month if I could, sending it to Fidelity Magellan Fund. The aforementioned Peter Lynch was the manager. Pop always told me that if I saved early, kept putting money in, it would compound. It would make a lot of money, more than he made. Seemed right to me. Now, suddenly I was in my car all alone, no phone, no money, no nothing. Fortunately, I had enough friends who were willing to take me in for a couple of nights or a couple of showers. But I was homeless, plain and simple. And you know what? I kept saving. You know why? Because Pop said I should. Like Larry Fink pointed out, our generation always knows that we would do better than our parents. We had confidence in the future. But if I didn't save, how could I do that? Not only did I not stop saving, not stop sending money to Fidelity, I tried to save even more. Maybe at 20, maybe an extra 5 spot, maybe at 10. I had to buy some clothes for certain, baby powder, you gotta have that. But I had no rent to pay, and that allowed me to put a little extra cash away. No insurance, hey, throw some to that. I was a proud saver, off the grid, for sure, but proud nonetheless. You see, that burglar may have thought he took everything from me, but he didn't take my savings. I wanted to make my father proud. Oh, and get this. I vowed to get rich right then and right there in the back seat of that Ford. A pile of clothes, whites on the left, darks on the right, bottle of Jack, 22 caliber pistol, all set for anything that came my way. And you know what? I did get rich from the Magellan Fund and by investing and making that money work for me. I'm all about the carrot when it comes to investing, but for the moment, let me give you a little stick. You think you have bad inflation right now? Back then, it was much worse. You worried about your job prospects? I was worried about where I could park to sleep at night and not get harassed or arrested. You're concerned about your country or lack of confidence in your country? We had Jimmy Carter flailing as president with the great money lads. What the hell was that about? Ability to invest? Let me tell you something. Living in that piece of junk of a car was not exactly a confidence builder. Investing? What the heck did I know? Pop told me he thought Magellan Fund was good. So I said, okay. Now, I'm telling you that any cheap S&P 500 index fund is good, and I am very confident in that over the long haul, for certain. So do this for me. It's the end of the month. Take 50 bucks. Try 50, like me, and open a brokerage account. And put money in an index fund between now and April 1st. I know it sounds strange, this is no pre-April Fool's joke, but saving money turns out to be habit forming. It's just that you have to start the habit first. Do it for Larry Fink. Do it for me. Above all, do it for yourself. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.